This is the NBC mobile unit in the heart, center, and the pulsing focus of a joyous nation on Times Square in New York City. Ben Grau reporting as I stand, literally stand, tiptoe, sticking my head outside the silver gray terra top of the NBC mobile unit and look uptown over a foaming, seething, writhing mass of faces lifted jointly and buoyantly and gloriously happy at the final conclusion of a desperate war which has seen its closing days in a desperate day or three or four of anxiety, turmoil, anticipation, doubt, fear, and being cast down. Are these people happy? That's the only word to express it. Happy. And all I need to do is turn my NBC microphone down over these folks here and to see this wave of smiles, confetti, streamers, banners, bells, jingles, flags, horns, and a joyous, joyous, glorious look on everybody's face.
This is Private First Class Al Bouchard. I have the great honor of introducing our Commander-in-Chief, the President of the United States.
Men and women of the armed forces, I'm speaking to you, the armed forces of the United States, as I did after V-Day in Europe, at a high moment of history. The war to which we have devoted all the resources and all the energy of our country for more than 3.5 years has now produced total victory over all our enemies. This is a time for great rejoicing and a time for solemn contemplation. With the destructive force of war removed from the world, we can turn now to the grave task of preserving the peace which you gallant men and women have won. It is a task which requires our most urgent attention. I think you know what is in the hearts of your countrymen on this night. They are thousands of miles away from most of you. Yet they are close to you in deep gratitude and in a solemn sense of obligation. They remember, and I know they will never forget, those who have gone from among you, those who are maimed, those who, thank God, are still safe after years of fighting and suffering and danger. And I know that in this hour of victory, their thoughts, like yours, are with your departed Commander-in-Chief, Franklin D. Roosevelt. This is the hour for which he so gallantly fought and so bravely died. I think I know the American soldier and sailor. He does not want gratitude or sympathy. He had a job to do. He did not like it, but he did it. And how he did it. Now he wants to come back home and start again the life he loves, a life of peace and quiet. The life of the civilian. But he wants to know that he can come back to a good life. He wants to know that his children will not have to go back to the life of the foxhole and the bomber, the battleship and the submarine. I speak in behalf of all your countrymen when I pledge you that we shall do everything in our power to make those wishes come true. On this night of total victory, we salute you of the armed forces of the United States, wherever you may be. What a job you have done. We are all waiting for the day when you will be home with us again. Good luck, and God bless you.
So that was President Harry Truman on August 14th of 1945, speaking to servicemen around the world after that total victory, as he put it, had been secured over the Japanese. August 14th, 1945, the Spirit of 45 campaign. Information on our website at kmjnow.com to establish the second and Sunday of August each year as a day of remembrance for those who fought, those who died, those who did whatever they could back home to support the victory in World War II. Now I want to take you out to Maury Nyberg, who's going to be my guest for the full hour next week. He served on the USS Jenkins and destroyer in the Navy during World War II. And Maury, I know you can save the rest of it for next week, but right now I'd like to know where you were on August 14th, 1945, what you remember about how you heard that wonderful news and what you did to celebrate.
Oh, yes, Paul, I remember it quite well. I was in San Diego because our ship was had completed their overhaul after hitting the mine out in Borneo. And so realizing that when we completed that repair, this war was soon going to be over, so we went on to San Diego to join the mothball fleet. And so we were in the process of undergoing the preparation for the mothball fleet. And so we were in San Diego at the time, and it was a madhouse. Of course, the streets, being a Navy town, the streets were just full of sailors and civilians, and everybody was so excited and shouting and hugging and kissing and what have you. It was an exciting time and really memorable.
So you were in San Diego, so you can't be the sailor who was kissing Edith Shane in New York. At least we can rule you out.
I wasn't that one.
When you heard that radio report from Times Square and heard President Truman, did that kind of take you back to that day? Did it make you feel you were living that again?
It really did. It was quite moving. And I'm standing here with tears in my eyes right now.
Well, I know that a lot of the things you experienced in World War II gave you a reason to have tears in your eyes, and we're going to save the rest of it for next week. But, Maury, I want to let our audience know. I know they can go hear you sing on Thursday in Kingsburg. You're going to sing God Bless America. Did I have that right?
That's exactly right. Our summer band concerts just began last night, I should say, and next Thursday night will be the second concert of this six-concert series, and I've been asked to sing God Bless America with the band at the Memorial Park.
Well, I know you'll do a terrific job, and I hope a lot of people come out and hear you, and then I know they'll hear you next week here on Hometown Heroes. So, Maury, thanks a lot. Enjoy the rest of your Saturday.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. Appreciate
it. You got it. Talk to Maury next week. That's Maury Nyberg of Kingsburg. He served on the USS Jenkins, a destroyer that has a pretty interesting story about how that destroyer made it through World War II. So we're going to hear from him next week.
News Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to Hometown Heroes on KMJ. Before I get to today's guest, a quick update. Last week, we discussed keeping the spirit of 45 alive and that bill in the House that would establish the second Sunday in August as a National Day of Remembrance. I told you that in order to pass that bill in time for this year, the bill needed about 20 additional co-sponsors. Well, you've been pretty busy. I don't know how many phone calls you made or how many emails you sent to your representatives, but thanks in large part to your efforts, there are now close to 60 co-sponsors, well more than the 50 needed to get it to the floor, and the bill should go to the floor of the House for a vote after the 4th of July recess. So thank you. Good job. Stay tuned. More on what that's all about at KMJNow.com if you missed it. And now, I'm going to talk to another Navy man today, 84-year-old Maury Nyberg of Kingsburg, just south of Fresno. He not only lives in Kingsburg, he's from Kingsburg, born and raised, a graduate of Kingsburg High, a proud Viking, 100% Swedish heritage, I understand, as Kingsburg is famous for. And Maury, let's start on where I start with so many veterans. December 7th, 1941. What do you remember about that day, and am I correct in assuming you were in Kingsburg when you heard the news?
I was, yes, I was. In fact, it was a Sunday afternoon, and we were driving with a friend of mine, took us to Fresno. That day we were listening to the radio, and we heard the news, and we were talking about that. It was a pretty terrific time to think of what took place over in Pearl Harbor, and to realize that we were being drawn into something that really was going to be a dramatic part of our lives.
Well, you're just a pretty young man. You're probably, 14, 15 years old at that time?
I was a junior in high school, yes, right.
Did it hit you that this might be something that changes my life, or was that a little too far off?
No, I figured we were probably going to be at it for a while, and I figured it probably would affect us in a very dramatic way.
I've heard some people who weren't old enough to serve yet say, if I'd have been old enough, I would have been in the next day, and they couldn't wait to go. Were you feeling that way, or were you glad you had a little time to think about it?
I was glad that I had a little time to think about it, yes. I know of men that... that lied about their age and wanted to get in and did that. But no, I wanted some time to think about it.
So you thought about it and you decided the Navy was the life you were looking for?
I preferred that to being drafted into the Army. I just figured that Navy would be better suited for me. So I decided to beat the draft, and when I graduated from high school, I joined the Navy.
Was it everything you thought it would be, or were your expectations a little off?
Well, no, it was pretty much what I expected it to be.
Did you have an idea of what kind of ship you wanted to serve on? I mean, had you seen different kinds of ships and gotten a taste of what different experiences might be like?
No, I really didn't have any expectations. I had no idea what I might be assigned to. I went to fire control school in Seattle, Washington, and it's an ordnance school where they train torpedo men, gunner's mates, and fire control men. The fire control men are the men that actually do the firing of the guns. The gunner's mates load and unload the guns, but the fire control men do the actual firing.
And I know that Kingsburg has a pretty famous gun club where they have some pretty good trap shooting competitions and everything, but something tells me you hadn't fired a gun quite like that in Kingsburg growing up.
No, I hadn't. No, I had gone shotgun hunting as we did back in those days. Nothing of this sort.
What kind of firepower did you get your hands on, and was that something that you got a kick out of, or was a lot of responsibility, or how would you sum that up?
Well, it was a lot of responsibility because I served my watch duty on the main battery director, which is the director for the 5-inch guns on a destroyer. My battle station was director of a 40-millimeter gun mount amidships, and so I was actually in the firing of that.
And you mentioned a destroyer. Your destroyer, the USS Jenkins, had some pretty interesting experiences, including nearly being sunk by a mine attack that threw that ship for quite a loop. In fact, the more I hear about your ship, the Jenkins, it kind of seems like it's one of those ships that had 9 lives, seemed to survive quite a bit. But why don't you start us off with how you ended up on the Jenkins and what that was like for a young teenage boy from Kingsburg.
Yes, I was shipped over out of Camp Shoemaker in the Bay Area, out of San Francisco Bay, and went aboard the SS Cape Victory, a troop ship, over to Milne Bay, New Guinea. And that's the very southern tip of New Guinea, and I was in a receiving station there. And then waiting for an assignment to a ship, and then I was assigned to the Jenkins, and then we had to go all over South Pacific trying to catch up to her, and we finally caught up to her, and I was the beginning of the Philippine campaign, and so we went all through the Philippine campaign with her, and then we were struck by a shore battery, an armor-piercing shell hit one of our gun turrets at the landing at Lingayen Gulf in the Philippines on the island of Luzon. And then we went all through the rest of the Philippine campaign and went down to Tarakan, Borneo, the oil fields there. They were going to have a landing operation down there to secure the oil fields that the Japanese were controlling. And so we had been on bombardment duty all morning for that landing. And coming out of the harbor about noon that day, we struck a mine on the way out of the harbor. And fortunately, we were in such shallow water that we didn't sink. We settled on a sandbar and did not sink. So then they sent a diver down in to close off some compartments to pump the water out and pulled us off the sandbar a couple of days later. And we had just enough buoyancy to float and then limped back to Subic Bay, in the Philippines to go into dry dock and to have the patch put on the hole to come back to the States for repairs.
That's a very, very good overview you just gave us, and I'm going to throw some more specific questions at you, but I want to get back to getting on this ship because time-wise, the war's been going on for a while. You're one of the younger guys,
and you're showing up pretty late in the war. This is what, late 1944, early 1945?
1944. Yes, I was a younger one, and but yet so many of the shipmates were of my age, and well, we were a bunch of kids, really, fighting a man's war.
And that's a great way of putting it. I'm curious, as you get aboard that ship, I'm sure a lot of the guys on the ship had been with the Jenkins through a lot of battles and probably had some stories to tell. How did they welcome you aboard? Did they give you a hard time about being newbies? Did they try to intimidate you with stories of what they'd been through? What was that like?
No, they didn't. As a matter of fact, they treated us, they were glad to have us on board, and some of the older men that had been on for a long time got transferred off and got to go home on leave. But we did have some men that had been on the ship ever since it was commissioned back in 42. They went on the shakedown cruise and then went over to the North African landing campaign and then transferred over to the Pacific and went all through the Pacific campaign, through the Solomon Islands, the Guadalcanal, all of those operations, and went all through the war.
Maybe if those guys were able to survive all that, I told you, you might be able to survive a few. But I'm curious, what was it like as a teenager getting onto this ship? I'm sure you've seen the newspaper headlines. You've heard all through training what the destroyers do. You know they're the expendable ships in the bunch when you put them next to the battleships and the cruisers and the carriers. It seems all a little intimidating to me, and how do you know you're going to wake up the next day?
Yes, it is a little bit intimidating, but yet you just did what the job that you had to do, and go with the punches. It was we had some bit of envy with the men that served on aircraft carriers, battleships, and much larger ships. They have ice cream machines and all of that, but we didn't have anything like that. So, but anyway, we were glad to be what we call tin can sailors, the destroyer sailors.
Well, the tin can Navy in World War II has a lot to be proud of, and a lot of our listeners have heard some of those stories. I'm curious for you, trying to get inside your head at the time here, when you got ready for your first action and probably not knowing when it was going to come, was that something that you looked forward to with anticipation, that you dreaded? What emotionally, what was that like for you as you got ready to get in a battle situation and fire those guns for the first time?
It was a bit intimidating, but yet really deep down, you just realized this is what we have to do. If we're going to win this war, we've got to get this job done. And you really didn't give a second thought of the risks that we were. It went with the job.
Do you remember what it was like, the first action that you saw when you first took that station and started firing away?
Yes, I do. Yes, it was a bit intimidating, but yet it had a bit of excitement to it, but you realize that there's a lot of devastation going on out there, and like I say, we just had a job to do, and we had to do it.
Now, you mentioned a moment ago when a shore battery firing at your ship hit one of your guns. A lot of your fellow sailors died in that action. Is that something where all the guys on the gun crews on the ship were pretty tight-knit? Did you know all those guys?
Yes, we did. Yeah, we knew all of them. And a very good friend of mine, one of the torpedo men, was hit by one of the pieces of shrapnel, and he was off of the ship for a time for treatment. But that was a rather traumatic time, because to see these shipmates just torn apart with this shell, that armor-piercing shell that exploded in the gun turret, was really kind of traumatic.
Well, I'm just trying to put myself in your shoes, and I'm sure you felt horrible for them and for their families. And then secondarily, there's probably this thought, that could happen to me.
Yes, that's true. That's true. You don't you don't really think about it at the time because there's so much going on and so much action going on. You don't really, at the moment, you really don't think about that. Thinking back, I think of one of the shells that was fired at our ship. One struck the radio cable that went from the bridge back to the after stack where my director was, and hit the cable and broke the cable, and the cable fell down right on top of me. And thinking back, that shell could have been off just a little bit and would have hit right where we were standing. But that's the way things work out.
There's a few kids and grandkids who wouldn't be here if that had happened.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. That's true.
Well, somebody must have been looking out for you. We're going to talk more about that and some of the experiences that Maury Nyberg had aboard the USS Jenkins, a destroyer during World War II. We'll take a break, come back with more of Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.
This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty on 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. You recognize the sounds of Anchors Away, and that signals that we have a Navy veteran as our guest today. It's 84-year-old Maury Nyberg of Kingsburg. Last year, he was the Grand Marshal of the Swedish Festival Parade. Am I ratting you out on that? Did I hear that correctly?
That's correct. That's correct. Yeah, that was quite a thrill.
How many Swedish festivals do you think you've been to over the years in Kingsburg?
Oh, my. Quite a few. I've been general chairman of the festival now for about 10 years, and so we've been going to many of them even prior to that. Of course, being here right here, we've been to a lot of festivals.
I won't ask you how many Swedish pancakes you've eaten over the years, because you probably lost count of that. And I understand that the Swedish festival is going to have some special guests in about a year and a half or so.
That's correct. Yes. At our ship's reunion down in Pensacola, Florida this year, this April, my wife and I decided to host our reunion in 2012 right here at Kingsburg at the weekend of our Swedish festival. So we'll have all of our shipmates that are still around in the parade, that festival.
So we can look forward to that in 2012. And you know, it's at a time when so many of these reunion groups are disbanding. It's good to hear that you guys are thinking ahead and planning to preserve those memories a little bit longer. The USS Jenkins was a destroyer in the Pacific in World War II. You heard Maury talk about some of the things that ship endured, and it endured a lot. Talked about the attack of the shore battery that claimed some of your fellow sailors in that gun emplacement. And a little later on, you're in an area pretty close to shore near Borneo, where supposedly it already been swept for mines, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. So we have no idea how that came to be, but anyway, we did hit this mine, and so when we were able to be pulled off that sandbar and limp back to Subic Bay, of course, we went into dry dock there, and of course, all of this fuel oil that flooded the forward half of the ship just ruined everything there, so there was nothing that could be saved. All of our food storage was there, and our mess hall, and so we really, all of that stuff had to be thrown away, and so it was a big oily mess to get all of that cleaned out.
Is it fair to say that when you look at the television these recent weeks and you see the pictures coming out of the Gulf Coast and all the oil-saked wildlife and all that, that kind of brings back memories of this? Is that the kind of picture it was?
Yes, I do. I can relate to that. And it is oily and black. And so we had to clean that out. And then, of course, they welded a patch over the hole. And of course, coming back to the States then, it took about 3 weeks to get home because all we had was our after fire room and engine room for power, and so they had to travel at a slow speed. And all the way back, why, we had nothing for fresh food, so we had Spam three times a day, morning, noon, and evening. Spam prepared every way imaginable. And then weevils had gotten into the flour, so we had weevil-filled bread and Spam three times a day.
And you talk about how the ship was limping along. I imagine that makes you feel fairly vulnerable, too, that any other blow could finish you off.
Oh, yes, it did. Uh-huh. But, of course, by that coming back to the States, that part of the Pacific was pretty well secured. So beyond that, it was the real hot spots were Okinawa, Iwo Jima, and that part of the Pacific. But coming back, we felt fairly safe.
And you gave us the overview of that mine explosion in shallow water, and thankfully the sandbar was there, so your ship didn't sink. But you didn't tell us where you were at the time and how you experienced that through your eyes. So where were you on the ship when that exploded? What did it feel like, and what was going through your mind?
Yes. We had been, like I mentioned, on bombardment duty all morning, and it was very hot because when they're on bombardment duty, all of the ventilation system has to be shut down, and it was very hot below decks. And the mess hall, the cooks had been on battle station all morning, so they didn't have anything to prepare for lunch, so all they did was slap some sandwiches together, had hot coffee. Well, I went down, and I was due to go on watch anyway, that I realized it was so hot down there, I had no inkling of staying down there to drink hot coffee. So I just grabbed my sandwich, went up to the main battery director and to relieve my buddy on watch. And I was sitting there on top of the director, ready to take a bite of sandwich when this big explosion, the whole ship lifted out of the water and it settled down, and my sandwich went flying, it was quite a traumatic time.
And for those who aren't familiar with the layout of a destroyer, the main battery director, you're pretty high up above the water, right?
We are way up high. That's the highest point on the ship without climbing up the mast. So it's very high above the water. And so that's where I was. And then, of course, as it turned out, my buddy that I just relieved on watch was one of the last men out of the mess hall because he was down there when we hit the mine, and he was one of the last men to get out of there. Fortunately, all of the men got out of the mess hall. The light stayed on long enough so that the guys could go forward through the forward part of the ship and a little hatch up on the bow of the ship, and they came out of there all covered with this black oil. And the only man we lost was a man in the fire room that did not escape that.
When you look back and you see the pictures now of the patched up hull, and you know what odds you had to beat just to keep that ship afloat and all the things that had to work together, is it hard for you to believe that only one man was lost on that entire ship?
That was very hard to believe. It's just amazing. God had a hand in that, because for these men to all get out of there was nothing short of miraculous.
With all these reunions that you've been to, and you're hosting one in Kingsburg coming up, I bet you've heard some of those stories of the guys who had to escape through the hole in a flooded, oil-slicked mess hall and seeing their lives flash in front of them. Is there something that really stands out in the stories that you've heard, how close it was for some of the guys that really takes your breath away?
Yes. One of my good friends was a torpedo man, and he was one of the he was the last man to be pulled out, and he tells the story of two men that rescued him, and he was sure that he was not going to be able to get out of there, but they pulled him out through the hatch. They were trying to close the hatch, but because there was a mattress stuck and it couldn't get it closed, and they pulled him out, and he credits them for saving his life. It's a very traumatic thing for him to look back on that and realize that.
Well, it sounds like if the mattress hadn't been there to slow him up a little bit, that they wouldn't have known he was in there to get him out?
It's very possible. It's very possible, yes. So, like I say, it was nothing short of a miracle that these men were able to get out.
And you told us where you were, way up high, and your sandwich flew out of your hand. I'm surprised you didn't fly off of the deck there or off of the main battery director. What did you do? Did you run down to see what was going on? Did you have a helpless feeling? What was going on for you?
No, we had to stay on duty. Fact is, we had the headphones on, and we tried to make contact and find out just what took place. But we had to remain on duty, so we had to stay on watch. So we had to stay right there.
Well, and I guess if you do have a fear that the ship might sink, the highest point is a good place to be.
That's correct. That's correct. But as I say, we realized we were not going to sink because we went down so far and then stayed right there. So we realized we were in shallow water and we're not going to sink. Had we been in deep water, we probably would have sunk.
Was that something, when you go through something like that, and you have such a great survival rate, and everybody knows what happened, is that something that you thought brought everyone on the ship a little closer together, having survived something like that together?
Oh, yes, definitely. There's a real, at our reunions, there's a close fellowship and comradeship among the, especially among our World War II group of men. Our ship was recommissioned for the Korean War and stayed in service through the Vietnam War. So at our reunions, we have veterans from all three wars attending. But there is a very special and bond with these men that served aboard during World War II. And the men from the Vietnam era and Korean era, they really they look up to us and really have great respect for us for what we went through.
You know, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but you told us in this story about having to eat Spam all the way back as this ship limped in. And by the way, was there a favorite preparation method of Spam that you prefer to this day?
Yes, they had canned pineapple that put over the Spam, which I think was probably the most tasty.
That's the Hawaiian version. I think they still do that in Hawaii, actually. They like Spam there. Now, so when you got back home, though, and I don't want to skip over the rest of the war, we're going to have some time to talk about this, but when you got home and you saw your folks, what did your mother have waiting for you?
Yeah, she was, being wartime and meat was so hard to get, and I hitchhiked home. I was on the first leave group, and I hitchhiked home from Long Beach, and I get home, and that night my mom had Spam. Oh, I didn't have the heart to tell her I'd been lived on it for 3 weeks, but anyway, she was proud that she had some meat to offer.
Did you ever say anything to her years later about it?
No, I didn't really. I didn't.
That took some self-control, I'm sure. We're going to take another break, but when we come back, we're going to hear more of Maury Nyberg's experiences aboard the USS Jenkins, a destroyer during World War II. You're listening to Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.
On the front line of freedom, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting with a Navy veteran of World War II today, Maury Nyberg of Kingsburg, California, where his ship, the USS Jenkins, will hold its annual reunion in 2012. He's looking forward to that, and I look forward to some more stories out of him. I want to throw a word at him here that for anyone who served on a destroyer at that point of the war in the Pacific, it's a word they've heard a few times and maybe think about at night sometimes, kamikaze. How ever present were the kamikazes? Obviously, you guys as the destroyers weren't their target, but you were the first line of defense. Was that a pretty much everyday occurrence to see these Japanese airplanes heading toward your fleet?
Yes, they were. Any landing operation where we had to protect the troop ships, the ammunition ships, supply ships, they would be ever present, and they would come after those ships. But our job was to shoot them down before they got to those ships. Fortunately, in the operations where we were, I don't recall one getting to the supply ships.
And that's a pretty good record that I'm sure your guys aboard the ship were proud of.
Yes, 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 we were. And it was our job to do. And fortunately, they, at that time of the war, they were very young pilots, and they were just trained to how to get the plane off the ground, and that's all they had to do. And that was it.
So you're, as a fire controlman, and for those of you at home, that doesn't mean he was putting out fires. That means he was firing guns. Why don't you try to put me in your shoes at the time? And are you constantly on alert that these kamikazes might be coming in? Walk us through how it happens. If you see or you hear that a plane is coming, where do you go from there?
Well, yes. You're constantly on the lookout, and a lot of eyes aboard ship, and constantly looking for those planes. And as soon as they get into firing range, why, all the guns turn loose, the 40 millimeters, the 20 millimeters, and this is a constant thing.
So if you're at your gun station and you're firing away, is there a trick to it? Did you, after shooting at a few of them, did you get a little better at how to lead in front of the plane, or how does that work?
Yes, and of course, every few shells, they're tracer shells, and you can see them where they're heading, and so you realize whether you're right on target or not.
And the further that plane gets, I imagine it, the adrenaline pumps a little bit harder when you realize that it might get past you. Can you give us a sense of what that feels like in the moment while you're trying to get that plane down out of the sky?
Oh, yes. Yeah, you have that sense of apprehension. Wow, what if he does get through? But like I say, you're so caught up in the activity at the time, you don't really have time to think too seriously about that.
And through your sight, how much can you see? I mean, do you have any magnification there, or are you just looking naked eye?
No, naked eye, and so it's there. Mm-hmm. The planes are not all that large, but yet you have quite good visibility of them, and you just keep firing away.
And I'm sure, and you talk about your group having the record of not letting any kamikazes through to the ships that you were protecting, but I'm sure in your travels you came across some ships that had been hit by kamikazes and got a glimpse of what that might look like, how devastating that could be?
Yes, indeed. Yes, we had seen several ships that had been hit by kamikazes, and the damage is just devastating. One ship, five Japanese Betty planes came in wingtip to wingtip and just took off the whole superstructure of the ship. It was devastating.
And I guess that alone is motivation enough to make sure none of those get through. Did you ever have a hard time? I know you describe it as just doing a job, and I know this is a tough question to ask people, but I think you can handle it. Was it ever hard shooting at a plane knowing that there's somebody in that plane?
Oh, yes. Yeah, you always think of that, but yet you have to realize that he's trying to kill you too. So it goes part of war, the process of war, that you have to take care of your job.
Another interesting job that you had came later on, and of course a lot of people know at the opening stages of the war, there were American troops on Corregidor who were surrendered. Many of them became prisoners of war. But later on in the war, that part of the world was retaken by Allied troops, and you had a pretty good view of that from your position aboard the Jenkins. Tell me what you remember about that action.
Yes, this was quite an interesting operation. They were going to retake Corregidor because the caves where the gun emplacements were all built by the Americans in World War One, and the huge network of caves and within this rock, a mountain, and so the process was that they started the B-24 Liberators would be dropping bombs and just absolutely obliterate the island, be engulfed in dust by the time they got through dropping all these bombs, and dive bombers would be dropping bombs at the face of the mountain where the caves were, and then the succeeding mornings, this went on for about 5 days, each morning, why we had the duty of going in very slowly toward the face of that hill and draw fire from any guns that were still operational. And so we would go in and we'd see a flash from the shore, and that would be one of the guns firing, and fortunately they were such bad shots, one shell would hit way short of our ship, and then the next one would be way past our ship, and they fortunately they didn't have to have a good aim. But anyway, we would hurry out of there, and then the dive bombers would come in and start laying more bombs at the island. And so every morning we would do that until finally then they had the landing operation. And then we were very close offshore protecting some troops that were landing on a little, very tiny beach there. But the paratroopers came in, and the sky was just filled with these planes, and then the paratroopers jumping out of the planes and hitting the top of that mountain. And we were, like I say, right offshore. We were just with the binoculars and being up high on the ship, watching this whole operation. It was pretty spectacular. And it was, we just had a bird's eye view of the whole operation.
Was that something that was, I can imagine it's very captivating. Was it exciting? Was it hard to watch at the same time? Did you see things that you kind of wished you hadn't seen?
Well, yes. It was really kind of heart-wrenching. You realize the troops landed, and then of course they would have a team of flamethrowers, and they would be creeping up to each one of these caves, and a big belch of flame, and you're realizing, boy, if there was anybody in that cave, why, they're just going to be burned to death. But yet they were the enemies. So but we were close enough offshore that we could see the troops very clearly in this operation. And then as we were sitting there, evidently a land-controlled mine was set off, and which was right off the bow of our ship and sent a geyser up higher than our ship. And so our skipper then just quickly backed us out of there and got away from that.
Thank the Lord. And when you talked about you going in, and you were the only ship that was going in to draw that fire?
Yes, we were. We evidently our skipper was a daredevil, and he volunteered to do this, and we were the only ship that was selected to draw this fire from those shore batteries.
I could call you a guinea pig, or maybe the carrot dangled out in front. But I mean, if anything says you're expendable, I guess that's it.
I guess that would be one way of looking at it. But it was something that needed to be done to see what guns were operational and how much more work they had to do to secure that landing.
So, and were you there when the island was secure, when that victory, at least at Corregidor, had been won?
Yes. We were around there, and of course the paratroopers secured that island in quite short order. And it's kind of a polywog-shaped island, the main island, and then it tailed off to a long tail. There were troops, a few Japanese troops there, and we watched the snipers. They were snipers, and shooting at our troops, and of course they took care of them. And it was quite an interesting operation.
I can tell how those memories would stick with you for a long time. And there's more to come. We're going to take our final break, then come down the home stretch of Hometown Heroes today with Maury Nyberg of Kingsburg. This is Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Now, more Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Once again, I'm going to tell you that the time has gone by way too fast with Maury Nyberg today, an 84-year-old Navy veteran from Kingsburg, served on a destroyer, the USS Jenkins, during World War II. That ship survived quite a bit, and it wasn't just enemy action, wasn't just the mine that blew a hole in the side or the enemy fire, but also Mother Nature was quite the strong enemy at some times, Maury. Do you remember what it was like to go around a typhoon to deal with some of the wild weather in the Pacific?
Oh, yes. Remember that very well. Being standing watch in the main battery director, as I did, and in those heavy seas, I'm telling you, it is really scary because the ship is pitching and going side to side, and it's such a wide arc. You swear it's just going to keep on going over one of these heavy seas, terribly high waves, and right up in the top of the wave, and then you hit the bottom, and the whole ship just shakes the daylights out of you when it hits bottom. It's a scary process.
Yeah, I imagine that's the last place that you want to be on the ship when that's going on.
Oh yes, that's right. But it's something that you've got your watch to stand and you've got to be there.
So what were you doing up there? You holding on for dear life?
Well, actually, in the main battery director, we would not be on top of the director there. In that kind of weather, you were sitting right down in your seat, which is a very tight fit. You have the pointer and the trainer, the two men, and then the radarman would be behind. But you're sitting in the seat, so you're secure there. But it's not a fun thing to go through a typhoon with in that ship.
You're secure in the same way you're secure on a roller coaster, huh?
That's about right. That would be one way of looking at it.
And I'm sure that you heard around that time, or maybe later, about the same kind of ship, destroyers, that were lost in some of those typhoons.
Yes, there were. We lost several in that big typhoon, and one of men from Kingsburg right here was on board the hull when she went down, and it's an unfortunate thing. We heard about it later, of course.
Is that another one of those things that you step back and say, "Wow, that could have been me. Why am I still here and they're not?"
Oh yes, that's true. Yeah, very very true. Because it's such a violent storm when those seas are that heavy, it could really bring a ship down.
We talked about some of the things that your ship, the Jenkins, survived, and the fact that it had to limp home, and you ate all that spam all the way back. If you hadn't been doing that, what would your ship have been doing? And have you looked back and seen what the course might have been for your DD-447?
Yes, we would have been involved in either Iwo Jima and or Okinawa. And then what was left of our destroyer squadron when it came to the signing of the peace treaty in Tokyo Bay, the Missouri signing the peace treaty aboard the Missouri, we would have probably had the duty of escorting the Mighty Mo into Tokyo Bay because one of our sister ships in our squadron had that honor. But had we not been back in the States for repair, that probably would have been our job.
But you're not complaining about how it worked out for you?
No, no, not at all. Not at all, because the further actions that we'd have been involved in either Okinawa or Iwo Jima could have been very, very dramatic also.
It's been a long time since World War II, and you've had a lot of time to think about it. When you look back now and you realize everything that your ship went through, everything that you survived, everything that could have happened to you, what are you most thankful for? And what do you think that we need to remember today about what you and the guys like you did all those years ago?
Yes. Looking back at it, we are just so thankful that we were victorious. We can thank God for that, because who knows what would have been. And the thing that is most disappointing today is the way they are changing history repeatedly, changing the way things really happened back then, and our history books are not giving us the true story of World War II and what took place. And so many times they're making America to look like the bad guy. Look, we did to them, but they overlook what they did to us to get it all started. And this is the disappointing thing today to me.
So when you have a chance, when you talk to your children or your grandchildren, who wouldn't be here if you didn't come home from the war, what's the number one thing that you want them to understand about the way it really was?
I do want them to understand that we were attacked, unprovoked attacked, and the war was brought to us in this way, and we had to respond. And as has been said, Japan did not realize that they were awaking a sleeping giant.
And does that give you a sense of pride to know that that sleeping giant did wake up, and that all those Americans acting in unison with some help from around the world were able to do what they did?
Oh, absolutely. And it's just nothing short of miraculous the way the United States responded so quickly and went into production and armed ourselves so quickly to respond to this attack. It was just really amazing.
Well, thank you for shedding a little light on that for us today, and thank you, Maury, for serving our country.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Pleasure's been all mine. That's Maury Nyberg of Kingsburg. He's been our guest today. You can find more information online at kmjnow.com. Thanks for listening to Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.